The committee will come to order. We do not have a quorum yet, but we're going to start and see if we can get some discussion done, and hopefully we need one more member, so that will help. This morning, I'm going to change up the order just a little bit, and we're going to start with my bill. So, Tama, if you come take over.
While Chair Keel is getting ready, I'll just welcome everybody. It's nice to be here this morning. And the reason we're changing it up is because my husband and his two brothers are coming. So, yeah. Of course, they wait and come right away. And they're like, oh, we don't want to sit in a committee meeting. I'm like, this is good. Look how many people are here. So, thanks a lot. And Chair Keel, if you want to talk about your bill.
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This morning, I'm pleased to present House File 804, which is a bill that attempts to address the caregiving workforce shortage by improving several training opportunities for individuals who work in the senior care settings. This bill includes expansion to the nurse loan forgiveness program, enhancements to the nursing facility, and home and community-based waivered scholarship programs, and remove some of the barriers to the TMA training for nurse facilities. Aaron Bowie and Carrie Thurlow are here to help me with a lot from Long-Term Care Imperative to walk through the bill. I also have additional testifiers, Dean, McDevitt. I shouldn't have, should I have? No. CEO Administrator of Mother of Mercy Senior Living in Albany, and Nicole Mattson, Administrator from the Good Samaritan Society Specialty Care Community in Robbinsdale, to discuss the need for some of the specific aspects of this bill. Madam Chair, I see that we have a quorum.
We do. The committee meeting will come to order. There is a quorum present. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 8th of 2017? Actually, I was going to pick on Representative McDonald.
You were.
Yes, I was.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I approve the minutes.
All right. All those in favor of moving the minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. So,
we need to move.
Okay. Rep. Keel moves House File 804 to be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Reform Committee. We have the bill before us if you want to continue on.
I will, with my comments earlier, I will turn it over to my testifiers.
If you would state your name for the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Erin Bowie. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Care Providers of Minnesota, here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. Walking through the bill, starting with Section 1, we are looking at adding home care nurses and nurses in housing with services settings to the loan forgiveness program. Right now, those types of settings are struggling with recruiting nurses, and we feel that this would be a good way to get more nurses to commit to working in those settings. Section 2 of the bill was meant to have the trained medication assistants in nursing facilities be able to receive their training on site, as is the case in home care settings. However, we drafted this incorrectly, so it's up to the chair if we wanted to strike this out right now and bring it back in the next committee or leave it as is and fix it in the next committee.
Chair Keel?
Is it possible to remove it and then we'll redraft it for reform?
Okay, so we're going to call on Ms. Pinelli to help us out with that.
Madam Chair and members, I think what we want to do is just remove, is it Section 2?
Yes.
So the motion would be to just delete Section 2.
Okay. Okay. Motion
Madam Chair, I will make the motion to delete Section 2 from the House File 804.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. So to your bill as amended.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow with Leading Age in Minnesota and also here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I'll just do a quick walkthrough of the remaining two sections of the bill. Section 3 is expands the Nurse Facility Scholarship Program. This is a very successful program that many of our nursing facilities provide so that their staff can pursue additional education and training while working in nursing facilities. One of the aspects of that scholarship program is to allow to help pay for student loan debt for people working in their facilities. In 2015, we added that provision, but there is a provision in there that requires that students be recently graduated in order to be eligible for those loan repayments. What our members tell us is that actually creates some equity issues between their staff, because they may have staff that have student loan debt that may not have graduated within the last year. So we would just propose to remove that to make it more flexible and to benefit more workers in those settings. The last remaining section of the bill is the Home and Community-Based Services Scholarship Program. And again, this is a new scholarship program that that this legislature passed in 2015 and has proven to be amazingly successful. It allows for the first time home and community-based service providers that that support senior care to, again, allow for some enhanced education and training opportunities for workers in those settings. It is an RFP process, and what we are told is that the demand for funding for those programs far exceeds the appropriation that currently exists for that. So there's a blank appropriation, and we look forward to having that conversation in finance, but would be seeking to expand that program to better meet the demand for funding in that particular area as well. I believe we have two providers that can speak to a couple of aspects to the bill, too, so maybe we'll step back and then be back to answer questions on the bill as well.
That sounds great. Thank you. So next on the list, we have Dean McDevitt and Nicole Mattson. And who wants to go first?
I can go.
Thank you. If you would state your name for the record, please.
Okay. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning in support of House File 804. My name is Dean McDevitt, and I serve as the CO and administrator at Mother of Mercy Senior Care in Albany. Mother of Mercy has been in operation since 1959, and we provide a spectrum of care to seniors in our community. Our camper offers a continuum of services, including 208 nursing home beds, memory care, assisted living, and independent care. And we employ 192 people, and we serve approximately over 200 seniors each year. Last year, Mother Mercy was fortunate to be one of 31 providers that received funding for the first round of the Home and Community-Based Services Scholarships. This was a new scholarship opportunity that first was passed in 2015. And is designed to provide educational scholarships for employees working in adult day, home care, and housing with services establishments. Our organization was provided $21,234 to train up to 19 individuals over the course of 2 years. I'd like to spend a few minutes just telling you a little bit how we plan to use those fundings and how we expect this funding will positively impact our staff and the people we serve. The first area was what we call the health support specialist. This is an apprenticeship program that has up to 9 college credits and 2,500 on-the-job training journeyman hours. This is something that is very valuable for our care assistants, because they're able to get some tools and education and actually get some college credits. This is very big for these people who typically just have high school diplomas, and also allows them to be leaders within our organizations and take some of those tools and better serve the seniors that we're here to serve. It also allows a lot of value, because it shows that we're investing time and resources, education in them, and they take that, and that also is a great retention tool, because when you invest in people, they really get more inspired and they want to continue in their services. So that's one of the programs that's been very successful and that we're very excited. We have 3 individuals enrolled in that course right now. a few of the other areas that we're looking at. We also do fitness programs, and that's where we try to keep our seniors as independent as possible, work on balance and try to prevent falls and things of that nature. So we're also looking to have people go through a health and fitness specialist certificate program so that they can, again, get that education and tools to do their job better. We're also looking at a Healing Touch certificate program, and this is where it allows some of our caregivers to be trained in some other ways to administer for people having anxiety, having behaviors, besides using medications and so forth. So it's a good alternate way to try to connect with the people that you're providing care for, and there again gives that education and tools to our caregivers. And the final one is the Validation Associate Program, and that's just a way of talking about how you deal with those that have dementia and Alzheimer's. It is kind of gives you a language and a tool to how to connect with those people in their cognitive state. So those are a few of the things that we are working on and will be working on. And what I'd like to say is that the House File 804 proposes enhance the funding to the scholarship program so that programs can even reach even more providers. And while the Department of Health has conducted two rounds of the scholarship grants, demand has exceeded the amount of the funds available. Scholarships are an important resource for providers like Mother of Mercy, which are the providing, you know, hardworking to recruit and train professional caregivers at a time when facing a severe shortage of caregivers. I urge lawmakers to support this proposal so that additional providers can offer enhanced training and educational resources to the staff working in the home and community-based service setting. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have, and thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. McDevitt. I have to say I'm pretty intrigued and excited that you're talking about Healing Touch. That's something I learned about from a nurse friend of mine, and I haven't really heard much of it in the area, so I'm glad to hear that. That's something you're considering and looking into. Are there any questions? With that, Ms. Matson, if you want to state your name for the record and continue on.
Good morning, Madam Chair and fellow committee members. My name is Nicole Matson. I am the administrator at Good Samaritan Society Specialty Care, which is in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. We're a specialty care facility in that we provide post-acute services to people that are rehabbing and also caring for those that have Huntington's disease, men with dementia, and men with behaviors. Here today, thanks to Representative Keel for bringing forward this bill, to support scholarships for nursing home employees. It is one of the only competitive advantages that we have in recruiting nurses, nursing assistants, and other people. We can't necessarily compete on wages, but we can on education and on flexibility and being able to have workers that we're supporting with education during their time that they're going to school. Allows us to have that worker while they're in school and then hopefully retain that worker thereafter. Over the last 5 years, we've been able to put over 19 nurses through school, many of whom succeeded and actually became a LPN or an RN, and most of whom are still working for us today. So that's a success story for us. The scholarship program is the only way we've been able to afford to do that. Just to highlight one of the people that we have supported, her name is Amy. She's an immigrant. She is a single mother. She came to us as a dietary aide over 10 years ago. She went to school to become a nursing assistant. We were able to reimburse her for that. We were also able to put her through school to become a trained medication aide. We were then able to use scholarship dollars so that we could support her life goal to become an RN. She's currently in school. She's a junior, and hopefully she'll graduate within the next 2 years. But that story is replicated time and time again in our facilities. We're not the only facility that supports people with scholarships, but it's a huge advantage for us in long-term care.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are there any questions? With that, is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? Again, members, anybody have any questions? Representative McDonald.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the Healing Touch, I didn't, can the testifier, can you maybe expand a little bit on that technique?
And
the Healing Touch, that's where it's kind of like considered an alternative medicine where we would be going through the center care training. And that's just teaches them how to maybe use lotions to give hand massages or giving a massage. And it has another way of a caregiver to connect with those that they're providing care to try to relieve some anxiety or behaviors. And it's proven to be very effective.
Yeah, thank you. It seems just on the surface seems to be a very, very intimate and healing way to connect with the patient or the resident,
right.
And very curious of that. And, yeah.
And it gives a whole new level of bonding between the caregiver and those that they care for, so it's been proven to be very effective.
Yeah. Very, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Any final comments? Chair Keel.
No, I just thank you very much, and I would love to see this passed on to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee.
Awesome. Chair Keel renews her motion that House File 804 as amended be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? With that, the motion prevails, and House File 804 is on its way. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next on the agenda is Representative and Chair Schumacher. If you'd make your way down. I know you're comfy, but it's time.
Good morning, Chair Schumacher. I have to put my glasses on just a second. Welcome to the committee, and I'll move that House File 823 be referred to Health and Human Services Reform Committee. We have the bill before us. I understand, Chair Schumacher, that the A1 amendment is the author's amendment. I'll move the A1 amendment, Chair Schumacher, to your amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, this amendment gets the bill into the form in which I'd wish to discuss it.
Is there any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Chair Schumacher, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. In our continued efforts over the last several years to brace and prepare for the impending silver tsunami, we have investigated and invested in reforms to the system that our aging and vulnerable adults are in. We started 2 years ago with the enacting of value-based reimbursement for the skilled level of care in our state. The next level of care down, often found in assisted or senior living settings, as well as in-home care, are addressed with the elderly waiver. The Elderly Waiver Program provides funds for an alternative to nursing home care when that care is better suited for the senior. There are a number of proposals affecting the waivered services in Minnesota this year. Just yesterday, we heard a proposal in HHS reform to improve the disability waiver rate system. I just want to clarify that proposals like that, the 4% campaign, and the House file that's in front of us today are not competing or conflicting proposals. All of these are dealing with different sets of waivered services. For the bill in front of us today, in particular, we are trying to do four different things. First, we want to rationalize the system and deal with what we have here, calibrate it so that moving forward, this is a system that is workable and can change and adapt with the times and the changing scenery that we see for our senior services. We also want to try and work with our workforce issues that we see in this area and trying to connect the data that we have within the waivered services to data that DEET also produces so that we can keep up with the information that's going out there. We want a reimbursement system that recognizes quality in the state and the quality of service that is being recognized there. We're establishing a performance measure so that providers of elderly waivered services are able to be measured for the work that they're doing. We want to better coordinate and streamline the process overall so that it's an easier system, not only for the provider, but for the senior as well. I think that's a lot of testimony that we hear from seniors is just how difficult it is to be a part of the system and to really make it work for them and to have a full understanding given the complexity of it. And finally, we want to preserve access for seniors as well. We've heard from many different providers throughout the state that it becomes difficult not only to have a workforce that will help with the waivered services, but because the system was set up so many years ago and hasn't kept up with the processes that we have today and the realities that we see today, that many are choosing to just get out of the system altogether, and that is going to lead to access barriers for many of us as we grow older throughout the state. With me this morning to do the walkthrough for us is Todd Bergstrom and Jeff Bostick from the Long-Term Care Imperative, and I would invite them to take it away.
Welcome. Good morning. Todd, are you going to go first? Please identify yourself for the rest.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Todd Bergstrom. I work with Care Providers Minnesota, and to my left is my colleague Jeff Bostick with Leading Age Minnesota, and together we're here representing the Long-Term Care Imperative. So, yes, we would like to give an overview of the bill that's before you. So the first thing to note is that well over a year ago, our two organizations began meeting with our members and trying to identify the very issues that are affecting providers trying to provide service under LVA waiver, whether in the community, in people's homes, or in assisted living settings. And with acknowledging that, one of the things we're trying to address is we have a program that began well over 20 years ago, has been a great reform mechanism to the state. The elderly waiver has saved the state millions and millions, perhaps even billions of dollars by having folks served in the least costly setting. What we're trying to do is, with this proposal, is kind of reform it and move it forward so that it complements the nursing facility payment reform that passed 2 years ago. So with that said, a couple of things. So as you look at the proposal, we identified five reform goals as a group. These are support person dignity and person-centered planning, assure person access to choice and services and settings, create transparent and timely collaborative processes, incent quality and performance measures, and then align funding with workforce needs. Within that, there's three areas. I'm going to go over the first one, and that is the payment rates and structure. So one of the things we wanted to do is look at how rates are set and come up with a new process. So within our bill, we identify the 8 or 12, perhaps 15 rates, and go about a new manner, that takes deed data and applies taxes and benefits, program support, administration, and supervision for RNs and social workers. In addition, we have also identified a reform that allows for payment prior to assessment, where a person would be able to move in to an AL setting and have an average payment for the first 60 days, and then have the workbook for assisted living settings actually come in and create that person-centered plan. Additional payment reforms include allowing licensed nursing services to be authorized, also create an in-lieu day process, and also a new cognitive and behavioral kind of incentive slash payment factor. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff.
Welcome. Thanks. I'm Mr. Bostick.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm Jeff Bostick with Leading Age Minnesota here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. Want to emphasize that the elderly waiver program pays for an extensive array of services, and we have attempted to become experts on how the rates are currently set for all of those services, and come up with a way to kind of reestablish the rates based on kind of existing workforce needs, and using actual data to do that, and doing it in a way that'll allow it to update over time as those conditions change. So that's it's a very complex process and a very complex program, but very important to keeping people in their homes and in the community and not in needing to move into institutional settings. In addition to the rate pieces that we've worked on, we also have looked at how do we put some quality measurements in place? Again, it's a sprawling program with a lot of different providers throughout the states, a lot of providers of different types of services. So it's a difficult challenge to kind of grab a hold of. So our bill calls for some work to be done in terms of identifying measures. We identified a group of areas where we'd like to develop some measures, some of them using existing information from surveys of providers, some of them collecting some information like staff retention, information about staff training and education, and probably the most ambitious piece, doing some kind of formal customer satisfaction survey of customers in settings throughout the state. And then developing scores on each of those measures so that you can have an individual provider score to use. Ultimately, the idea being after this has been tested for a while, people are used to it, allowing payment incentives to be tied to how people score on these measures. And the final part of the bill, so in addition to redoing a lot of the payment structure and all of the rates, and in addition to developing some quality measures that don't exist today, there are a number of issues with the elderly waiver, we'll call it payment process. It's a very complex program, not just in terms of how much it covers, but in terms of who's involved in it. There's county financial eligibility, there's service eligibility. Most of this money flows through managed care, so you've got a care coordinator there, you've got whoever the provider might be in this case, and you've got the recipient and their family. And the communication between all these different entities doesn't always go as smoothly as possible, so I don't think we're saying that we're going to solve a lot of these issues, but we did identify a few improvements that we've included in the bill. And I just want to highlight a couple of those. One is more sharing of information between the people doing the assessment and the provider who's going to provide the services. There's a little bit of a wall now that providers feel that they don't get all the information that they could get about how payments are being determined. Another one that's very important is there's currently nothing in statute calling for someone's service plan to be revisited based on the fact that their circumstances have changed. An elderly waiver program today serves a much more complex level of need than it used to, because a lot of these people would have been in nursing homes 10 or more years ago. Now they're in the community at home or in an assisted living setting, and their needs will change because they're complex. They have complex medical situations, and currently the law doesn't call for a process to make sure that the plan is being changed so that the person is getting what they need. Right now it's only you're reevaluated at least once every year, but a year is a long time for someone whose needs may change more rapidly than that. And finally, there are a lot of issues with the financial eligibility determination versus the service determination and the amount of time those things take. So there's a proposal in the bill to make assessments last for 90 days, which gives more time for the financial eligibility determination to be completed. The issue with assessments currently expiring after 60 days is in some cases, if the financial doesn't get done, then both of them, then you have to go back to the beginning on the service assessment side and do a new assessment because your previous assessment is no longer good, and it just delays people getting approved for services that they need to get. And with that, I think we'll take any questions about the
members. Do you have any questions of our testifiers? You did a good job, I guess. Representative Chair Schumacher, do you have any other testifiers?
I do, in fact, Madam Chair. I have with us today Michelle Nash and Danielle Lesmeister. They are coming here to testify in favor of the bill.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, ladies, and if you would identify, I don't know who wants to start first, but identify yourselves for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning in support of House File 823. My name is Danielle Lesmeister, and I'm the Director of Community Services for St. Francis Health Services in Morris, Minnesota. St. Francis is a nonprofit organization providing services to the aging and vulnerable people throughout our state. We were founded in 1963 as the Villa of St. Francis, a nursing home in Morris, Minnesota. Since that time, we've expanded to 13 skilled nursing facilities, 10 senior housing buildings, and nearly 80 group homes. We offer a continuum of services to ensure that all vulnerable individuals have access to care and services. Each year, we serve approximately 2,400 individuals and employ roughly 2,600 staff. I want to thank Representative Schumacher for bringing forward this House File 823, which will bring much-needed reforms and investments into the Elderly Waiver Program, which is the Medicaid program that funds community-based services for low-income seniors throughout Minnesota. This legislation is very much needed so that we can continue to ensure access to home and community-based services for low-income seniors. 60,000 Minnesotans will turn 65 this year and every year for the next 15 years. That is a number that we've correlated with a city the size of Lakeville. As our senior population grows, our demand for senior care will also increase. Minnesota has been nation-leading in developing programs to support access and choice outside a nursing home setting, but in recent years, the Elderly Waiver Program has not received the financial support it needs to meet the demands of today's seniors or the growing future demand. This has caused us within St. Francis to make some difficult decisions in how we can go forward serving these people. As a mission-based, faith-based organization, we have not been willing or we have not felt that it was the right move to evict people or move people out of the setting they call home because they can no longer financially meet the requirements of the rates that we charge. So we've kept them, but that in turn has caused us to put limits on the number of people that we can accept in on the Elderly Waiver Program because we know that we're going to have people that are spending down and unable to financially meet the obligations of the building. So currently at one of our sites in Scanlon, Minnesota, it's a very impoverished area. They have a 17-person elderly waiver waiting list. We have apartments that we could rent to them if the payment structure could meet the facility's operations. So we have 17 people in that one community alone just on our waiting list, and there's several apartments. This has also caused us to increase rates to our private pay residents, making them sort of subsidize the low-income people there, and it's also caused us to put rate freezes on the employees that work there. Some of them are only coming in at minimum wage. And they can go down the street to a gas station and make much more money. But they stay because they love the residents and they have a deep connection. And there's people that have been there for over 10 years. There's people that have been there since the building opened. And they love it so much that they stay. Every recipient of elderly waiver is eligible for nursing home level of care. That means that if seniors cannot find home and community-based service options in their community, that they may need to move to the nursing home as their only option. As a nurse that has only ever served people in their home, I've been doing home care for nearly 15 years now as a nurse. That deeply saddens me because this is the place they want to be. Either in an apartment building that they call home or their home in the community. St. Francis Healthcare primarily serves rural communities where there are limited options for home and community-based services. When the Elderly Waiver Program is not adequately funded, low-income seniors do not have meaningful choices about where they receive their care in the communities. When we have to set these limits, sometimes we are the only assisted living in that community. And so if there isn't a bed in the nursing home or they really have no desire to be in the nursing home level of care, they may have to drive 30 or 45 miles to get to the next town that has an assisted living that will accept them. Inadequate funding to the Elderly Waiver Program has also impacted our ability to recruit and retain quality professional caregivers. While the 2015 legislation that reformed our care center reimbursement structure was very much needed, and I do greatly thank you guys for all of that and Representative Shoemaker for bringing that forward, it has created inequities for providers like St. Francis that operate care centers as well as home and community-based services. Although the health insurance pass-through that you created was amazing and it's helped so many of our employees, we can't afford to offer that same insurance to the employees within our home and community-based services settings. So therefore, we're creating disparities between both sides of the company. We also cannot afford to pay our staff anywhere near what they could make in the nursing home. So you have sister companies that are competing for staff that can't leverage anywhere near the same support. We also received the scholarship funding that was afforded through there and received two grants, and we've been able to push our staff through, but an easier option to be able to afford that to them would be amazing as well. If you have any questions, thank you.
Representative Baker, do you have a question?
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. And thank you for making the trip down here from Morris.
Yeah.
It's a nice drive-in early this morning. I did it myself from Wilmer. So thank you for what you do. And again, I think a lot of us think that Chair Shoemaker did a great work with a lot of us last couple of years in this reform, and we're seeing that as well out in the nursing homes. My question to you, I'm a small employer, and my question would be, as you struggle with some employees got the benefit, some employees did not, kind of under the same umbrella, do a lot of the employees switch back and forth sometimes when you need a service in one area but the other? Do they have different rates and different how does that kind of work internally with your company? I'm just kind of curious about that because, again, we were not able to extend it to everybody, but I'm just internally, how does that work for your company? And thank you again for coming.
Yes. Ms. Lesmeyer.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Baker. It makes it very difficult. We still have been able to maintain many of our staff. I'll give an example from our Morris location. We're on separate sides of the town. We're not attached like a standard community, but we are still sister companies. And we used to share some employees where maybe we only had a part-time position and they could certainly fill in the hours at the nursing home. But that's made it more difficult because then the overtime rules, their wage is significantly higher than they make at the assisted living. And so the overtime pushes them up even higher than that. But yet they still have to work 60 hours for the nursing home to get the full reimbursement of their insurance. So when you're adding them together, that becomes a problem. It also becomes a problem just trying to keep the staff that we've worked so hard to grow in our setting because they're seeing that they can make $14 an hour at the nursing home or $10 an hour at the assisted living. And maybe I wouldn't leave for $4 an hour more, but when you're talking $10 or $14 an hour, that's a huge difference. So I have to support my staff because you're working paycheck to paycheck and you're making ends meet. So I fully understand why they do it, but it has created a disparity between the two companies.
Representative Baker? Okay. Well, thank you. Anyone else have any questions? Okay. Okay, well, let's move to the Ms. Is it Nash?
Hi, good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Nash, and I am the executive director and owner of Legacy Care Homes. I'm a licensed independent social worker with a master's in administration and policy. I own the business with my partner. She's an RN. We own two residential care homes in the West Metro. We provide 24-hour care to seniors in a small home-like setting. We have two homes side by side. Each home houses six individuals where the residents receive 24-hour supervision and direct hands-on care through the comprehensive home care license. We as well have a housing with service registration then that meets their housing needs, which creates covering their meals, housekeeping, laundry, daily interactive activities tailored to their needs and wants. We're very similar to the large corporations, but we operate as a small business. Legacy Care Home has a customized living contract now for only 3 years. Once the state took over doling out contracts, we were able to get one. But as a social worker, I've been in the long-term care industry for 20-plus years, and I've worked on many levels with the MA program and the Elderly Waiver, the Alternative Care Grant Program, CADI program, so I'm very familiar with many years of how, either through long-term care or the housing side of it, so I've seen it morph and grow and change over the years. I want to thank Representative Shoemaker for bringing this much-needed bill forward. When I was asked to be a part of the work group assembled by Care Providers of Minnesota and their long-term care imperative partner to examine and re-image and redesign the Elderly Waiver Program, I jumped at the chance. When the legislation reformed the payment system for nursing home, it resulted in the needed increases in reimbursements for seniors in the nursing home, as you've been hearing. However, it is now important to take the next step towards community-based services, which provides care to low-income seniors who qualify for nursing home level of care in their homes, wherever they call their homes. More and more Minnesotans are choosing to stay at home and receive community-based services rather than moving to nursing facilities. Minnesota has been a leader in changing the conversation when it comes to providing community, home and community-based services to seniors, but there's still underlying structural issues with the system. When the elderly waiver system was designed in the 90s, rates were developed by each county. Then there was centralized, then it's been centralized to the state-based uniform system about 8 years ago. Since the start, providers have had challenges with the new rate-setting system. These challenges are both structural as well as payment-related. Now that we've lived with the system a little bit and learned more, it's time to update and reform and incent quality to the system. It's an exciting time to be in long-term care. We've got lots of growth. Choices for seniors are increasing every day. Models of care are changing. New initiative is coming up. There's real opportunity to utilize resources in a better way. To that end, we are interested in quality of care as part of this discussion. It's important that we include in the tool a measurement for quality for elderly waiver providers and to reward quality for caregiving. It's important to consider tying rates to something tangible, such as market rates and wages. Providers, their employees, seniors, and their families need to know they are going to have a reliable and sustainable source of funding. For at least the last 24 years that I've been in long-term care, elderly waiver rates have been on a roller coaster. The small increases we have seen over the last 5 years are offset by previous cuts to funding and increased cost to delivering services, and increased competition for employees, as you've heard from my colleague here. This adversely affects our workforce and directly influences our ability to hire and retain staff. The high turnover rates cause a disruption to our seniors, of course. They're not able to keep up on knowing their daily needs that we want them to know and the intimacy that we're trying to create for them. We want caregivers who look at long-term care employment as a career, not just a job. Too often, we have great employees who feel a calling to work in this field but simply can't afford to stay because of the cannot afford to work in long-term care. We know the number of seniors needing care is going to continue to grow in Minnesota. We need to ensure we prepare to meet the needs of our seniors, families, and caregivers. In closing, flexible community-based services are a critical part of a successful and affordable care strategy for Minnesota. Reforming the Elderly Waiver Program will help us access and give choice to seniors and families to help provide quality that we're trying to push for our seniors and support the person-centered care. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions for me.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions, Ms. Nash, or our testifiers at all? Well,
we have, I guess we have one more person to
testify. So thank you, ladies, for joining us.
Thank you.
Welcome. Will you introduce yourself?
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Mary Jo George with AARP Minnesota, and on behalf of our membership, we are very proud to be able to endorse and support House File 823 as well. We want to thank the Long-Term Care Imperative and Representative Schumacher for bringing this bill forward. I think, as you've heard, the Elderly Waiver Program is very important for seniors to allow them to live independently in the community. We know that is the preference for more seniors, that they want to live in their homes and communities as possible. So this is a very important program. We think these investments will help the providers recruit and retain a quality long-term care workforce, which we think is essential as the population ages and as the labor market tightens. Moreover, though, we really support that the legislation begins addressing ways to reform the program in ways to incent quality, improve outcomes, and focus on person-centered care. The reforms that we think are very important for consumers in this package are three. One, it temporarily increases to living service rates to avoid hospitalizations for seniors. That can be very difficult, and so we need to look for ways that we can help keep the senior living in their community rather than going to the hospital. The second is adding provisions for the nursing component services that we believe is, as we understand it, is not being reimbursed for such things as injections, wound care, and other critical services. And I think as people have more complex needs, this is a very important service as well. And then finally, we do like the addition of the customer satisfaction survey and performance measures. We additionally support the performance measures in the assisted living facilities. I think in the bill we refer to it as customized living. These measures include such things as the satisfaction survey, citations from the Department of Health home survey, home care staff retention, and staff training. While it's not clear how the survey data would be released, we would urge that the consumer experience survey results would be publicly disclosed at some point, while obviously safeguarding the privacy of individuals. I mean, it's our understanding that the department and in the governor's budget, there is a proposal to create an assisted living report card, because I think today, unlike nursing homes where we have a lot of quality information that consumers can shop for these services, we don't in assisted living. So in conclusion, we just want to say this program is very vital, and we absolutely do support it, and we think it can help provide more community-based settings rather than more costly nursing home placements. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Representative Schumacher. This bill, it seems it's a good reform bill, but I'd like you to explain to me how, at some point, how this is going to, if what's in here that is maybe going to be more costly, but what will close that wage gap between the nursing home and the community base? I mean, what's in here that directly, and how far does this take us to closing that gap?
Chair Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Allen. The primary focus of this bill is to create the quality measures to streamline the process, and then the secondary component is the wage portion of that. The way that gets done is by tying the rates that we get here to deed data and making sure that what the state as a whole is seeing for the same type of work, the same level of skills needed for that work, the same regional information, tying that to the rate so that it keeps up with what we're trying to do, and that we don't have to keep coming back and doing a percentage increase here or there. It keeps up because it's going to be directly connected to deed data, and that's how we'll look to address the wage issue in here.
Representative Allen?
Yeah, thank you.
Is there any other questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Schumacher, I really think that this particular part of the bill is so important, And then I want staff, maybe Ms. Iverson can, or Danielle, just verify. Just reading the summary, it allows a monthly customized living services rate for a client temporarily increased in lieu of the client going to the hospital. So think about that. That's a wonderful component right there alone. If you just had that one sentence or one paragraph, I would support that. But and then it requires a temporary increase to cover additional nursing home care services to avoid hospitalization. Surprising that we haven't done that in the past, or have we? I mean, so we haven't.
Madam Chair, there are opportunities for this to happen today. It just hasn't been utilized. I think that some of the concern is, especially from the health plans, is that it just isn't as clear as it could be with this. So this really goes to clarify those pieces there.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. So, Representative Schumacher, thank you for the clarity. Just really, I'm sincerely, if you think of that one component, my mom's now 80 and at home, and she probably wouldn't want me to
don't make her any old.
Sorry, Mom, we're in the camera. But just the thought of letting them to stay in the house and allowing additional services to avoid hospitalization is a wonderful piece. And I just wanted to point that out. If it had, maybe it was pointed out, I had to leave for a bill. It's really worth hollering out. So well done to you, Representative Schumacher, and the advocates that are working on that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Are there other testifiers in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? I guess not. So, Representative Schumacher, I'll renew my motion that House File 823, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and House File 823, as amended, is re-referred.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So with that, Representative Baker, I believe you have a bill. As everyone comes up, I will Representative Baker moves that House File 803 be referred to Health and Human Services Reform Committee. We have the bill before us. Representative Baker, when you are ready, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members. Again, I mentioned earlier today that I'm an employer, and I really look for these type of ideas and workforce bills that make sense for us, especially in our senior care facilities and our aging population. And so House File 803 does a lot of things with creating some incentives for people to come up with really good ideas all around the state, and we want to reward those folks with the ideas and the innovation to some groups that maybe have had a hard time getting employment. And I think we have some great ideas that are floating around, and we just want to find a good pathway to allow them to do that. So with me, Madam Chair, are Aaron Bowie, and then the very short chair is a very short Carrie Thurlow over on that end. I wanted to turn it over to our testifiers that will walk us through the bill. So with that, Madam Chair, I turn it over.
Thank you, Representative Baker. I have to point out what my son-in-law says is that dimes are smaller than pennies, but they're worth a lot more.
But I gave up a chair, though.
My mother is only 5 foot, so she appreciates that comment. Anyway, welcome to the committee, and which one of you ladies would like to start? Ms. Bowie, go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Erin Bowie. I'm Director of Government Affairs for Care Providers of Minnesota, here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. And I want to thank Representative Baker for bringing this bill forward. We have heard a lot of sobering facts about Minnesota's aging population. We know Minnesota is looking at 60,000 new seniors every year through the year 2030. We know that in a few short years, for the first time, we will have more seniors than school-aged children. We know that as baby boomers reach retirement age, Minnesota's senior population will double. We also know the challenges our state, our communities, and our families will have in caring for our seniors. Long-term care providers across the continuum continue to struggle with recruitment and retention of workers. There are over 2,900 worker vacancies in nursing facilities across the state. Our providers across all settings report that one of the main challenges they face in hiring is the lack of applicants for open positions. We are trying a multifaceted approach to bring workers into the pipeline. There is no one idea or solution that is going to fix this issue. Representative Baker's bill will offer an opportunity for those with existing successful programs to expand or replicate them, and will hopefully bring forward new innovative ideas for bringing workers into the pipeline. They might be statewide, regional, or even community-based ideas. And just a couple examples of people we have talked in the past with about their programs. We have in the metro area the International Institute, which does a fantastic job of bringing new Americans into the workforce. They have a CNA training program where they have a 98% passage rate. We had talked with them about their ability to expand or replicate their program in outstate areas with populations that have a high concentration of new Americans, and funding was one of the large barriers to that. So this is a program we would hope that they would be able to apply for. We have a woman out in western Minnesota, a dedicated person who works in the adult basic education field, and she has started working on developing an app to teach literacy to adults in the language of a CNA so that they would be ready to move into CNA training and into the workforce. This is something that she needs funding to help complete. It's an idea that she could apply for. So, again, I want to thank Representative Baker for bringing this bill forward. We think there are a lot of great ideas out there, and we just need to give them a little help to bring those ideas into work. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Thurlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm the Senior Vice President of Advocacy for Leading Age Minnesota, and here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. Also, for the record, I have 3-inch heels on, so that helps my height as well.
Chair.
It's the chair.
But in keeping with the theme, I'll keep my testimony fairly brief as well. Madam Chair, members... Representative Baker, we do want to thank you for bringing forward this legislation. And as Ms. Bowie has indicated, we know that you have heard a lot about the shortage of professional caregivers in this field and in many other fields. And we know that this is not the only sector that is facing a workforce challenge. It is the number one concern our members are talking about statewide. And even with tools that we have created in the last couple of years, much thanks to members who have supported those items, we still need to focus this year on building the available pipeline of professional caregivers. So not just focusing on keeping those that we have, but we need more people, not just to meet the demand for today, but for the growing demand that we know will occur as our aging population grows. We have wonderful creativity amongst our members, and if you travel around the state, you will hear many examples. Ms. Bowie gave a couple. We had a couple last week in the Senate side of things where there are collaborations going on with high schools and higher education institutions and others. So there is wonderful creativity to solve at a local level how to bring more people into the field. And rather than bringing you a bunch of small bills, this bill aims at creating a fund to help incubate those ideas, support those ideas financially, and potentially so that providers can learn from each other and potentially replicate those ideas throughout the state. So this is an idea to help foster creativity in solving the issue. Our providers cannot do it alone, and they are asking for assistance and look forward to your support of this bill so that they can get support in building this pipeline of available professional caregivers. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Thurlow. Are there any members that have questions of our testifiers? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for this bill? Oh, Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I like this bill a lot. I mean, it's similar to what we do in the district I represent with hire, and it's very labor intensive, but it's a very good program that focuses on individuals and sort of meets them where they're at in the community and then helps them overcome some of the barriers. And it requires those in the community that are most familiar with the circumstances to provide those services. So this sort of grant making is good. I also challenge the industry to to look at retention. But one thing to get people there, but we also need to look at retention, because the if we're going to people that are unemployed, long-term unemployed, or have barriers, oftentimes when they get to the workplace, there'll be additional barriers with respect to retention, and that generally involves looking at the elimination of bias in the workplace. And that is something that, especially implicit bias often requires specialized training to work on those issues. And so I think that's an important factor.
Any comments? Okay. Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the testifiers, Ms. Bowie or Thurlow. On the blank appropriations, is there a ballpark number that you think would be appropriate?
Ms. Bowie.
That's something we have talked about. We want to have a number that is meaningful enough to actually make a difference, but we also don't want to put a number on it that puts it out of reach of being funded, so we haven't settled on that number yet.
Okay. Representative McDonald?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Bowie. And then I guess I know I've been here for 7 years. It's going to be referred to the Health and Human Services, probably finance.
After it goes to reform. Yes.
At that point, you'll work out a number that would be appropriate, neat, necessary. Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have the same question as Representative McDonald.
Great minds think alike.
I was wondering about the amount there. You know, if there is enough, if it ends up getting funded enough at a sufficient level to have several grants. Just wondering if there was any requirement that it be kind of spread around the state. Also, just to make sure every part of the state could benefit from this program, because I think it sounds like a valid program as well, a good idea as well.
Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, that's a great question, Representative Freiberg. As a rural guy myself, I usually like to discuss that with our stakeholders and how we can best execute those kind of things. So this bill is still kind of being worked. I think, again, with our dollars that we want to focus in on, what type of groups we're going to bring to the table. Representative Allen had some very good points about really making sure that those barriers get eliminated. I mean, we're talking about new Americans. We're talking about veterans that maybe have been out of the workforce for a while that we want to bring in, folks that have not been employed for a while. So I think we want to get down to is where is maybe the greatest need, and maybe we can kind of channel some of these incentives to the areas of the state that have the greatest need as well. So this bill is kind of getting firmed up and worked as we move along here, and this is kind of our first litmus test, if I could. So we really appreciate your feedback, and we'll keep working on this bill. Thank you.
Ms. Thurlow, did you have another comment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would just point to Subdivision 3 of the bill also. It spells out the eligibility requirements that are currently in the bill. Certainly, we would welcome any additional enhancements to the bill. This is eligibility requirements that are modeled after the similar to the Home and Community-Based Services Scholarship Program, with the addition of nursing homes in eligibility. And I think if you look at the last two funding cycles on that particular program, you'll see a tremendous amount of variety and diversity in geographic location and proposals and whatnot. So certainly we would want to encourage that sort of geographic diversity, but know that I think we've kind of hit that mark on the review process on other programs like this as well.
Okay. Yeah, there's one fact that glares at us. We're all getting older, and we're all over Minnesota, so we have to balance those concerns. So, is there anyone else that would like to testify at all? Anyone from the audience? Well, I thank you very much, Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, this is a great bill. We would really appreciate your support today.
Okay. With that, Representative Baker renews his motion for House File 803 to be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and House File 803 is re-referred. Thank you. With that, members, I think we've fulfilled our agenda for the day. Next week, just so that you all know, next week will be our deadline.
So we have to have everything to Health and Human Services reform after the 22nd. Our deadline is actually the 24th. But so you're aware of that. And if you sit on this committee, which you all sit on, Health and Human Services reform, I wouldn't give away that time frame. I got a feeling that Chair Schumacher is going to be looking for it after we have our deadline done, just so that you're all aware of that. So with that, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to that point, so if we miss the deadline next week, is there a chance then to have a bill heard in reform, HHS reform?
I would suspect, yes. You could talk to Chair Schumacher about that.
Yes. And then will next week be the last meeting then for the year?
Yes. Yeah. But I, like I said earlier, I would not give that time frame away because I got a feeling we're going to be meeting with Health and Human Services reform. So
we'll keep that under our hat.
Yeah.
And Madam Chair, maybe another question again. Just again, I'm still sort of a newbie around here too. But let's say that our deadline is finished for this committee. But do we ever see the need to sometimes? Because again, we're still in a two-year biennium.
Mm-hmm.
Do we ever have committee hearings after deadlines just to start talking about even some ideas for the following session or anything like that? Is that a possibility too?
That's a very big possibility. And if you have some concerns or we see things molding and realize that, you know, there's something else that we would want to do or certainly have conversation about and work on, absolutely. I'm all for that. And because I think this is a very evolving conversation. We're going to be working on it for a while.
Well, Madam Chair, this committee is very focused on that long-range elderly component that we often focus on. And we may get some really great ideas after deadlines, and I just want to make sure we continue those conversations with this committee first. So thank you.
Correct. Thank you very much. Well, with that, members, then, we will adjourn.